Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I am Matt Erickson, and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 67, titled, Should I Invest in International Funds? And I realize I typically don't do two investing shows in a row, but I really have felt a desire to do one on international investing for a long time, and so I needed to get this one out there. The next two after this, next week's will be on frugality versus cheapness, and the one after that will be on the satisfaction formula, so you don't want to miss those two. Those are going to be really good, especially for those of you who prefer the non-financial podcast-related topics. So today, though, we're going to talk about international investing. So as I said on the last podcast episode, we have options. Some people, like one book that I recommend called The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins, he advocates for simply doing a total market index fund, U.S. fund. And if you want to put bonds in, a total bond index fund, and that is adequate for a portfolio. He does not believe that a person needs to invest internationally because his argument is much of the big companies in the United States, such as Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Apple, they do much of their business overseas, so that we get international exposure through those companies bringing in profits from overseas. However, a countering argument could be made that there are a lot of companies outside the U.S. that are fantastic companies that we do not get to participate in if we don't have an international fund in our portfolio. So some examples of that could be Toyota or Nestle or other companies that are headquartered outside of the United States. So my personal bias is that I believe in both having a U.S. international index fund, a U.S. total stock market index fund, and an international total stock market index fund. This way, we are able to capture all 9 to 10,000 of the stocks sold across the world, and we don't limit ourselves to just one country, the United States. This provides some additional diversification. It provides more exposure to more companies. And so in international investing, in any given year, the best performing stock market is usually outside of the United States. So the United States typically does well and over time has provided a 9 to 12% return on your money, which is fantastic. But most years, the best market is outside the United States. Now, how do we know which market that's going to be? Whether it be China, Russia, Chile, Brazil, India, we don't. That's why these total market index funds that I have through Fidelity and they're sold through other platforms are amazing, because they capture all the international stock market and the emerging market stock market, which are countries that are in emerging countries like Chile, Brazil, Russia, China, and others. So international diversification has historically improved risk-adjusted returns. So when you take risk into consideration, so basically many argue that they don't want to invest in international funds because over the last decade plus, the U.S. has outpaced international in most years. So a purely U.S.-centric fund would have done better than one that had international included in it as well. However, from the year 2000 to 2010, international far outpaced our S&P 500 index fund in the United States, which was basically at 0% for the decade. International had close to a 7% return that decade. So we do not know what the future holds. We do not know if international or U.S. will win. There have been periods of time over the last 100 years where they have taken turns. But if you take risk into consideration of the formula, adding some international to your portfolio can improve performance and also diversification and make your portfolio less bumpy and less tendency to jump all over the place, and a little more steady and even, because sometimes when one market goes up, the other one goes down, and it gives you a little bit more steady nature to your portfolio. So history suggests that actively managed funds may offer potential outperformance in international markets. That's what some people believe. I personally don't really buy into that. Some people use the excuse of, well, we're going to use actively managed funds because it gives us a little bit a better feel in international markets. I personally stick with the index funds, although some believe that if you're going to use actively managed funds, it's maybe best to use them in emerging markets or even in bond funds, but I don't agree with that personally. So the long-term rally that U.S. stocks have had over the last decade has really benefited most investors. However, it's also led some investors to have more of their portfolio devoted to U.S. stocks than they have intended. Overexposure to a single geography can breed diversification risk in a portfolio. So leaving it vulnerable to a downturn in that geography and underexposed to a rally in other parts of the world. So in other words, if our portfolio gets out of tilt and is heavy U.S. centric and international really rallies for the next decade, for example, we might be kicking ourselves that we had such a home country bias. Most places around the world have a home country bias where they tilt more towards their own country. I do that. I have about 80 to 85% in U.S. funds and 15 to 20 in international, depending on kind of how each one is doing. And that's the kind of the place where I've landed, what I'm comfortable with. Many recommend that you do what the stock market is, which is kind of 60% U.S. and 40% international. If you buy a total world index fund, VT, through Vanguard, that's about how it shakes out, 60% U.S., 40% international. So it's important to kind of re-examine your global mix and your stock allocations to consider if you want international exposure or not. There are some powerful reasons to invest outside the U.S., such as enhanced diversification, the potential, like I said, for a better risk-adjusted portfolio return, and larger opportunity set. Nevertheless, many investors sometimes still lack the international exposure because they have some misperceptions or some fears about the unknown or about this international asset class. So I'm going to go over four myths that investors might have for investing overseas, contrasted by what Fidelity found and believes is a more realistic perspective on investing international. So the world's top performing developed market index from 2005 to 2018. So I'm going to go through these countries and I want you to notice how many of them are the United States. So these were the top markets between 2005 and 2018. So 2005 was Canada, 2006 was Spain, 2007 was Finland, 2008 was Israel, 2009 was Norway, then Sweden, then Ireland, then Belgium, then Finland, then Israel, then Denmark, then New Zealand, then Austria, then Finland. So Finland made it on there three times, which is kind of unusual. But the United States did not make it on as the top performing stock market in any of those years. So past performance is obviously no guarantee of future results. The U.S. market could outpace and could be the top performer in the decades or the years to come. We really don't know. No one knows that for a fact. Some people believe that the United States stock market is overpriced right now, and you will find a lot better price per share on international stocks right now or value stocks. So we've talked about tilting towards small cap value stocks, for example. The PE ratio on those as well as on international stocks is lower right now compared to U.S. stocks. So the argument could be made that even though the international has lagged behind over the last many years, right now is a great time to buy with the concept of buying low and selling high. So myth number one, we're going to go over a few myths. Myth number one, the U.S. is the world's best performing stock market. The reality is this is sadly not true. While U.S. stocks have had higher returns than overseas stocks in aggregate for the past several years, the best performing stock market in six of the last 8 years has been located outside the United States. So historically, developed market international and U.S. stock performance is cyclical. So one typically outperforms the other for several years at a time. So timing these rotations is difficult. though, which is why it's important to have both U.S. and non-U.S. exposure in your equity portfolio. Investors underexposed to foreign stocks could miss significant gains when overseas markets rally or suffer losses when U.S. stocks decline. So history suggests that given their cyclical nature, international stocks will likely eventually make a comeback and outperform their U.S. peers. So for example, from 72 to 76, U.S. outperformed. However, from like 78 to 80, international did. And then they go on these like five-year runs where U.S. will outperform. Like for example, from 96 to 2002, international outperformed. Then U.S. went on to outperform. So it's just, it's different, and it often goes through several year cycle, which is kind of hard to predict, which is why I think having both is helpful. Now, if you don't want to complicate your portfolio, you're confident in the U.S. economy being the greatest nation in the world, and you're comfortable investing in just the U.S., by all means, don't feel like you have to go out and change your portfolio because of this podcast. This isn't advice. This is just my ideas of a non-financial advisor mindset. So myth number two is international investing is too risky. So the reality is international stocks in combination with U.S. stocks have historically lowered long-term risk in a stock portfolio compared with an all U.S. portfolio. That's because historically the performance of U.S. and international stocks has not typically been perfectly correlated, meaning they go the same way at the same time. So this reduces risks when stocks are not perfectly correlated. Fidelity's research on strategic allocation indicates that a range between 30 to 50% exposure to international markets as a percentage of your total equity can help provide an appropriate level of diversification and enhance portfolio risk-adjusted returns in a multi-asset class portfolio. Also, the absolute return of the globally balanced portfolio is almost level with that of an all-US portfolio. So anyway, Fidelity recommends between 30 and 50% would be a good number. Mine is 15 to 20% just because I have a little bit more bias to the US. But if you look at from 1950 to 2019 annualized returns for an annualized US portfolio is 11.3%. And an international portfolio is 10.3%. So the global portfolio of a balanced 70 US, 30% international is 11.3%. So the standard deviation, which measures volatility or risk, the US portfolio is 14%, international slightly more risky at 15%. However, if you combine them together with 70% in US and 30% international, it lowers the standard deviation or the risk or the volatility, however you want to state it, to 12.8%. So putting them together is what lowers the risk and the standard deviation, which is kind of what people like Harry Markowitz and other people who have studied what's called the efficient frontier have deemed as to be a smart way to manage your portfolio. So anyway, I guess what I'm saying is if you want to use international, you could use anywhere from 15 to 50%, depending on where you want to go. Myth number three is U.S. multinationals provide adequate international diversification. So that's the J.L. Collins argument. So the reality is the stocks of large U.S. companies with operations overseas are sometimes highly correlated to the performance of the overall domestic stock market. Highly correlated stocks in a portfolio may indicate a lack of diversification. Therefore, U.S. multinationals like Apple, Microsoft, Google are not always good replacements for international stocks for diversification purposes. The table that I'm going to go over a little bit shows that. So international stocks can provide more diversification benefits than just the U.S. multinationals. So I think I'm actually going to skip this chart, but things like, I think I'm just going to move on to myth number four, actually, because that chart's a little hard to explain in auditory fashion. So myth number four is one needs to hedge currency to improve international stock returns. Reality is actually history shows that hedging currency returns doesn't improve international stock returns, at least not over the long term. Currency hedging, which means holding a stock denominated in a foreign currency and an equal but opposite short position in the current currency itself is intended to prevent currency fluctuations from hurting the stock price. While it sounds good in theory, the time and cost it takes to hedge currency has not paid off over time. Since 1973, currency hedging has detracted from returns in 50% of quarters and contributed to returns in 50% of all quarters. So this is kind of a more complicated concept of timing currency and hedging. I'm not going to dive too much into that because I have a feeling that most of my audience isn't overly interested in that. If you are, you can certainly do some internet research on what that all means. So to summarize, for the past 30 years, the best performing stock markets have been located outside the United States. That means investors who are focused solely on U.S. stocks missed out on attractive opportunities for growth and diversification. So consider increasing your allocation to international stocks. It could make a world of difference in your portfolio. And I wanted to share that just because if you look at the last 100 years, there have been these 7 to 10 year cycles where one outperforms the other. We've been in a 10 year plus cycle where US has outperformed international. So if history continues to repeat itself, logic would tell us that possibly international is about ready to go on a run. And if you invest now while prices are down, this would be a fantastic time to start maybe diversifying your portfolio into international index funds. I use the Zero Index Fund through Fidelity that has an expense ratio of zero. It is a wonderful index fund that has all of the international developed markets, and it also has exposure to emerging markets, all in a great index fund that covers the rest of the world outside the United States for zero cost. And that's the one I use. There's a few good ones with Fidelity. There's also a few good ones with Vanguard you could consider. Now, if you've gotten started and you're still kind of in that 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 range, feel free to just keep pouring money into the total market US fund until you make more money. If this stresses you out to hear this, how much you invest and your savings rate is far more important than whether you invest in US or international, in my opinion. However, if you feel like it's time to maybe diversify and use the whole world instead of just the US, this might be a great time since stocks have been high in the United States to sell some of those. Maybe sell part of your total US fund and buy the same day an international index fund. It's pretty easy to do. The trading platforms on Fidelity and Vanguard make it easy to do those trades. If you need someone to walk you through that, just find someone with knowledge. It's pretty basic, or you can just call Fidelity or Vanguard and they will walk you through it. So that's all I had planned for today. I hope you guys enjoyed that discussion on international investing. Like I said, my next few podcasts will have to do with frugality and cheapness and also how to find satisfaction in life versus happiness. We're going to go into some really cool concepts about that. If you like the show, if you could leave a rating on Spotify or on Apple, that would be super helpful for the show to expand and get into more people's hands. My goal is not to profit off of this podcast, simply to educate and provide entertainment and hopefully reach as many people as possible. Thanks so much to each of you for taking the time to listen. I so much appreciate you and your support. Hope you're all doing great in your individual lives. And remember, the simple life is a good life.